Counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO in Cascadia, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in Portland and other frequencies elsewhere. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly Media Manipulation. That's the same as the video veil, only without a D. And a look at the news you're not supposed to know. Well, I made it here at the last moment despite the tremendous snow drifts and the blinding blizzard. The mastodons were out and clashing their tusks with each other. And actually, this was another one of these days in Portland, which seems to happen every year, in which they tell us that it's going to snow. And I get all excited because I grew up in Texas. I'm thinking, oh boy, snow, that's like Christmas. And I look for the snow, and the snow doesn't come. So I didn't have any trouble getting here. But there's trouble elsewhere. There's trouble in the White House, I am so glad to say. So many things to pick out, you know, since the megalomaniacs took over in D.C., it's been easier and easier to do this show. I remember there were times, especially before the Internet, when I would have to, I would go to the international newspaper store downtown, and I would search around and see. Usually I was only semi or unemployed, and so I would pick out one newspaper, and I would try to jot down notes or memorize what was in some of the other newspapers, and then I would record shortwave and write down what I found out from that, all in an effort to get away from the corporate-owned news media. Now I have the Internet, and it's just so lovely. Two men appeared in court on Tuesday in London, according to Reuters and reported in the Daily Mirror, accused of leaking a secret document to which a newspaper said, showed that U.S. President George W. Bush wanted to bomb Arabic television station Al Jazeera. Now, you've heard about this before. But what slant have you heard on it? He's just joking, right? I don't think so. The hearing came a week after the Daily Mirror reported that a government memo said that Prime Minister Tony Blair had talked Bush out of bombing the broadcaster's headquarters in Qatar in April last year. Now, I want to depart from that text and say, if you're joking about something, then the person you're joking to doesn't really have to talk you out of it. If you're joking, you know, you have a good laugh and another snifter of brandy and go on to the next topic, because it's not that thick, is it? The White House, according to the Daily Mirror, has dismissed the report as outlandish, and Blair denied on Monday receiving any details of a reported U.S. proposal to bomb Al Jazeera. Now, I think that's interesting, too. He denied receiving any details of a reported U.S. proposal. But that's not saying that he didn't talk Georgie out of his crazy idea. Defended David Keogh, now how do you say that? Whatever it is, a civil servant who used to work at the cabinet office, was charged with making a damaging disclosure of a document relating to international relations. His co-defendant, Leo O'Connor, once a researcher for a former member of parliament, was charged with receiving a document which he knew or had reason to believe was protected against disclosure by the Official Secrets Act. Now, isn't that awful that they have that Official Secrets Act in Britain? It's good that we live here in the land of the free, where you can grab a U.S. citizen at the Chicago airport and hold him for 3 years in a Navy brig and not say what the charges are and say horrible things about him internationally and keep him in solitary confinement. And then when you finally talk about maybe letting him go and ignoring habeas corpus and every dot, comma, and letter of the alphabet on the U.S. Constitution, then you charge him with something completely different. So, you know, here we have freedom, and there they have that darn Official Secrets Act. Of course, I'm talking about Jose Padilla, who I learned not to say Padilla. Now let's turn to that suspiciously sodomist American rag. Oh, I said that wrong. Sodomist American rag called Newsweek. That's a new word to learn from the president. Sodomist American rag called Newsweek, in which, in an article by Michael Isikoff and Mark Hosenball, quote, a senior official at 10 Downing Street, Blair's official residence, who insisted on anonymity because of the sensitivity of the subject, recently seemed to give credence to the Al Jazeera threat. The official told Newsweek London Bureau Chief Stryker McGuire, I don't think Tony Blair thought it was a joke. So that's interesting. There you have Tony Blair not quite denying it. The memo saying that Tony Blair had talked him out of it, and a senior official insisting on anonymity saying he doesn't think Tony Blair thought it was a joke. So we have a president who evidently, as far as we can tell from press reports, wanted to bomb a news agency. And I'll have more on that news agency in a minute. One of the few journalists to claim to have a detailed briefing on the memo's contents, the Daily Mirror's Kevin McGuire, also says the document indicates that Blair took Bush's threat so seriously, thank you, researcher, that he spent part of the meeting trying to dissuade Bush from attacking Al Jazeera, end quote. I was very tired because I worked extra blue-collar hours this week, and I was almost afraid that I wouldn't be able to do the show, but my lovely spouse volunteered to do some research for me, which I think was very helpful. Thank you. Thank you. I love you. Anyway, remember, we're talking about the President of the United States, the President of the United States, the man with the nuclear launch codes permanently at his fingertips, followed always and everywhere by an aide with an electronic device to authorize instantaneous planetary thermonuclear destruction. Yeah, that's who we're talking about. You know, that guy, the one with death at his fingertips. More on this. Did Bush plan to bomb Al Jazeera by Juan Cole? You know, I kind of want to drive this into the ground because this is one of these stories where U.S. press doesn't want to belabor it, to be really nice about it. They'd really prefer to ignore it. And the right-wing apologists are out there trying to say it just didn't happen at all. But sorry, it happened. Salon.com is where you can find this. Last week, and by the way, if you want to see these details and part of my script, pull up, let's see, it's called, this time I'll get it right, I swear, presswatch.blogspot.com. There, that's it, presswatch.blogspot.com. And there you can find Presswatch scripts from the last few weeks, kind of story, except for last week, which was genocide cover-up today. Genocide cover-up day, hooray. Well, back to the topic. The Daily Mirror reported that George W. Bush had told the UK Prime Minister Tony Blair in April 2004 that he was planning to bomb the Al Jazeera offices in Qatar, or Qatar, however you say that. The report, based on a leaked top-secret government memo, claimed that Blair dissuaded Bush, say that three times quickly, Blair dissuaded Bush from bombing the Arab cable news channel's offices. An anonymous source told the Mirror there's no doubt what Bush wanted, and no doubt Blair didn't want him to do it. The Mirror quoted a government spokesman, also anonymous, as suggesting that Bush's threat had been humorous, not serious. But the newspaper quoted from another source who said Bush was deadly serious, as was Blair. That much is absolutely clear from the language used by both men. Departing from the text from Salon.com written by Juan Cole, of course we're talking about the context of that Official Secrets Act. And people are afraid to stick their necks out completely in due time and print the whole memo. So American bloggers and internet activists are asking for it to be smuggled to them so that they can print it. And but as far as I know, it hasn't been. The report kicked off a furor in Europe and the Middle East. It was predictably virtually ignored by the American press. It would be premature to claim that the Mirror's report, based on anonymous sources and a document that has not been made public, proves that Bush intended to bomb Al Jazeera, but the frightening truth is that it is only too possible that the Mirror's report is accurate. Bush and his inner circle, in particular Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, have long demonized the channel as vicious, inexcusably biased, and abetting terrorists. Considering the administration's no-holds-barred approach to the war on terror, the close circle of ideologues that surround Bush and his own messianic certainty about his divine mission to rid the world of evil, the idea... I got to put my pinky next to my lips when I say evil. The idea that he seriously considered bombing what he perceived as a nest of terrorist sympathizers simply cannot be ruled out. Add in the fact that the U.S. military had previously bombed Al Jazeera's Kabul, Afghanistan, and Baghdad, Iraq offices. The U.S. pleaded ignorance in the Kabul case and claimed the Baghdad bombing was, whoops, a mistake. And the case becomes stronger still. Skeptics have argued that it is inconceivable that even Bush would consider bombing an office containing 400 journalists located in the friendly Gulf nation of Qatar, whatever. But again, it is more than conceivable that Bush decided that it was essential to neutralize an enemy outpost and left the tactical question of execution to spooks and generals. Certainly, there is strong evidence that Bush and his advisors, in particular Rumsfeld, were thinking along these lines. Oh, heck, I can say that word. I'll just make a way to say Qatar. Or let's see. The Q is usually labial. No. What do you call that? Palatal fricative. So it's. And the A evidently isn't an A because other people are saying Qatar. So I'll sort of schwa it. So it'll be Qatar. No, Qatar. Qatar. That's what I'll say. Anyway, ironically, Rumsfeld himself had telegraphed the strategy during an interview in 2001 on Al Jazeera, or Al Jazeera. On October 16, 2001, Rumsfeld talked to the channel's Washington anchor, Hafez Mirazi, who once worked for the Voice of America, but left in disgust at the level of censorship he faced there. Although most such interviews are archived at the Department of Defense, this one appears to be absent. Mirazi showed it again on Monday, and it contained a segment in which Rumsfeld defended the targeting of radio stations that support the Taliban. He made it clear right then that he believed in total war and made no distinction between civilian and military targets. The radio stations, he said, were part of the Taliban war effort. In fact, Al Jazeera bears no resemblance to the pro-Taliban radio stations that Rumsfeld defended attacking. Now, I thought I'd bring to you some of Al Jazeera's style of reporting, which you can pull up if you feel like attracting the attention of the NSA, the Northern Command, CIA, and God knows who else. Go ahead and pull up Al Jazeera's English. But anyway, as millions, look, this is the headlines for today, December 1st, 2005. As millions mark World AIDS Day, this is the terrorist reporting. The United Nations has said there will be no excuses in meeting commitments for the treatment and care of those with the virus and prevention of its spread. Marking the official launch of World AIDS Day on Thursday, the UN called for an exceptional response to the threat and said that while adult infection rates had dropped in some countries due to increased use of condoms and changes in sexual behavior, the epidemic continued to grow. Well, there's a Taliban topic for you. Now let's see how the Taliban Al Jazeera, let's see how they report on the Arab world. This should be interesting. Okay. The United Arab Emirates, the UAE, will hold its first elections with a vote to pick half the members of a consultative council, the president announced. Sheikh Khalifa bin Zayed Al Nahyan, hey, I got all the way through that name, said on Thursday that the Federal National Council, the closest body the country has to a parliament, will have half its members elected and the other half appointed. Yep, that's what they said about the UAE. As you can see, Al Jazeera supports terror with every word. So what's their reporting on Africa like? Here's today's story on Africa. South Africa's High Court has ruled the country's ban on gay marriage is unconstitutional and instructed Parliament to amend marriage laws to include same-sex unions within the year. The Constitutional Court ruling put South Africa on course to become at least the world's fifth country to permit same-sex marriage. It will also be the first country in Africa to do so, a continent where homosexuality is largely taboo. Well, there's several topics for you, and clearly the sort of slanted propaganda that justifies U.S. bombs. President Bush's speech outlining his plans for a complete victory in Iraq prompts one Baghdad paper to call for action rather than words. In the wider region, several papers attack Mr. Bush's refusal to set a deadline for the complete withdrawal of U.S. troops, arguing that their presence is fueling the insurgency. Some also urge Iraqis to speed up their reconciliation process and take their fate into their own hands. I didn't tell you that's BBC that I'm reading now. Now, here's BBC's summary of Tariq al-Jubri in Iraq's Al-Mada. They write, "The Iraqi citizen has endured a lot. He has long been patient, waiting to see part of his dream for a secure future. Thus, he has the right to get answers to many pressing questions and not just statements and rhetoric. He wants actions, not words, translated into reality on the ground, into projects, job opportunities, and prosperity." Here is from, let's see if I can say it right, Qatar's Al Rayan. "Nobody from the U.S. administration, including President Bush, has ever explained the meaning of victory that the U.S. is seeking. It seems that the word victory, in the tradition of U.S. policy, means the total refusal to set a timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops, since this would incite the terrorists." End quote. And now here's a writer in Al-Hayat. Even if President Bush calls withdrawal a national strategy for victory in Iraq, it will not make any difference on the ground, just as it will not make any difference either, calling the withdrawal a redeployment of the occupation forces. Neither Cheney, Rumsfeld, nor those in the extremist and obsolete gang of the right wing will ever admit their strategic faults in the war against Iraq.
Ooh.
Steaming. Now turning to Egypt. This is from Al-Jumhuriya. Sure, I can say that. The occupation forces should admit the need to withdraw or at least announce the timetable for their pullout, which is a prerequisite for any possible settlement. This is something that President Bush does not seem willing to accept after he said yesterday that there will be no Iraq pullout without victory, end quote. Now Jordan's Al Ray newspaper, they write, that there will be no Iraq pullout without victory is a story that not even children would believe, and Washington itself realizes that victory is impossible. Now let's see the pan-Arab newspaper Al-Quds, Al-Arabi. They write, President Bush will face serious difficulties in fulfilling his promises to achieve victory in Iraq because his war was immoral, unjustified, and based on lies. History has shown that all past occupations ended up as failures, and the U.S. occupation will not be an exception, end quote. So, heck, you have to wonder how it's going to play in Peoria. Of course, that's the whole idea. He doesn't care what the world thinks, as long as he can fool us. If you have comments, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Rupert Carnwall in Washington writes in the Independent, which is a British paper, in practical terms, neither the 30-minute speech nor a 35-page national strategy for victory in Iraq issued by the administration beforehand offered great novelty. The aim was to convince Americans deeply skeptical about the handling of a war that has taken the lives of some of the U.S. troops and is costing $6 billion a month, that the White House had a policy beyond a mantra-like repetition of stay the course. Polls show a majority of Americans think the U.S. is bogged down in a Vietnam-like conflict that has made the U.S. more, not less, vulnerable to terrorism, and Mr. Bush's approval ratings have slumped to a dismal 37%, the lowest of his presidency. Perhaps you heard that old Orrin Hatch slipped up and called Iraq Vietnam the other day. Number to call 503-231-8187, and that's in the 503 area code. And hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like all Americans to look at this involvement in Iraq from a longer-term perspective and go back to the Reagan administration, where Reagan jumped into Israel's conflict with the Palestinian and neighboring states. And since doing that in the early 1980s, it seems that the rights and the treatment of the Palestinian people has suffered, and the United States has a obligation and responsibility to make sure that there isn't like this two-handed treatment of peoples, and there needs to be a more even-handed treatment, and I think Israel would get its security that way.
I believe it's Tom DeLay that says there's no such thing as a Palestinian.
Well, I don't know what you would call them. I guess the servant sector workers in Israel, or at least they used to be. But
no, but I'd call Tom DeLay a racist nutcase.
Well, the point is that there's solutions to these problems, and I've been watching over 20 years as the situation has deteriorated in the Middle East, and the treatment of the people isn't one that is going to make the situation any better. So, I mean, I think we need to put pressure on the people who are representing our government. And I would even look at, like, impeaching the whole Bush-Reagan crew for, I suspect that they're just simply on the take. I think that the aid money that goes to Israel comes back in a lot of different ways in terms of funds given to these politicians to carry out the hardline right-wing agenda, which is a militarized police state over subjugated people.
You know, we can take them to court at this point, but we can't impeach them because why? The Republicans have a majority. And
okay, well, it's something that can be talked about. If people are willing to look at the top-level politicians in this country as, by and large, pretty much a group of criminals that are on the take. I think they're bought out by Israel, they're bought out by Saudi Arabia, they're bought out by Mexico, and they're bought out by China.
Well, Botten, that's very Germanized. I haven't heard that for a while. Okay, well, thank you for that call. I do quite agree with just about everything you said. And wanted to comment more on the president's speech. Number to call if you have comments, 503-231-8187. Our strategy in Iraq is clear, said Mr. Bush. Our tactics are flexible and dynamic. We have changed them as conditions required, and they are bringing us victory against a brutal enemy, end quote. And now a comment from The Independent. They say, after 2.5 years of war, nobody in Iraq believes the U.S. is winning against the insurgents, who have the active or passive support of the 5-million-strong Sunni Arab community. A key objective for Mr. Bush is troop reduction and convincing the public the administration has a strategy. No one anticipates withdrawal of all troops anytime soon. Now back to Mr. Bush. He says this war is going to take many turns, and the enemy must be defeated on every battlefield. Yet the terrorists have made it clear that Iraq is the central front in their war against humanity, and so we must recognize Iraq as the central front in the war on terror, end quote. And The Independent says the supporters of al-Qaeda now have a haven in Iraq, which they did not have before the war. Prior to invasion, there was no serious al-Qaeda presence in Iraq. CIA Director Porter Goss said that Islamic extremists are exploiting the Iraqi conflict to recruit new anti-U.S. jihadists. Mr. Bush has admitted that al-Qaeda accounts for only a tiny part of the insurgency. The aim of the bulk of the insurgency appears to be localized, namely, driving out the U.S. Now let's quote Mr. Bush again. Iraqi security forces are on the offensive against the enemy, cleaning out areas controlled by the terrorists and Saddam loyalists, leaving Iraqi forces to hold territory taken from the enemy, and following up with targeted reconstruction to help Iraqis rebuild their lives. The paper says the U.S. has been taking territory from the insurgents since the start of the fighting, but the war is still intensifying. There is little sign of reconstruction. I have a lot more to say about that, but it seems I have a caller, so number to call, 503-231-8187, and hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I just had a general comment. The first thought was I agreed with the prior caller. I'm actually Jewish, and my mother was born in Nazi Germany. And as a Jew, I especially feel shame with what's going on with the Jewish and the Palestinian situation for us to be doing this. I feel in some ways we're doing the same thing with the Palestinians. But I guess my comment is I feel, you know, Bush is doing these god-awful things, but Bush is also being supported here. And I think, in my mind, there's a level of we can't tolerate people's inactivity to the truth and talking. And I think I kind of feel like there's got to be a call to action of people speaking up when some of these levels of lack of awareness are expressed.
You have to wonder, where's the line of collaboration?
I know. It's like, do we recognize that we're all human, and do we recognize that we have the right to life and the right to peace, or can we actually put that aside? And that just amazes me, and I don't understand that, and that saddens me greatly, especially as a Jew with the background that I have, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really why I want to call and say that, and hope that people will, you know, especially some of our own religious fanaticism, and I'm hoping people talk up to that and, you know, say, you know, where is, you know, who does have the plank in their eye? So
it's a good question to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for that call.
Thank you.
I've been going down a list of the outrageous statements, lies that the president uttered the other day. Here's another one. Iraqi forces are earning the trust of their countrymen. Just leave it right there. Who believes that? Iraqi forces are earning the trust of their countrymen who are willing to help them in the fight against the enemy. As the Iraqi forces grow in number, they're helping to keep a better hold on the cities taken from the enemy. As the Iraqi forces grow more capable, they're increasingly taking the lead in the fight against the terrorists. Here's the newspaper's answer. Iraq is getting closer to outright civil war. Sunnis are terrified of Shia troops and police. The Kurds want to reclaim Kirkuk. Each side has its death squads. John Pike, a military analyst, said it was impossible to assess the ability of Iraqi forces. If they're saying there's been a change around and American forces are not taking the lead, but that Iraqi units are taking the lead, then it's difficult to understand why they are still shipping home so many body bags, end quote. And I could add to that and say the whole statement is just absolutely absurd on the point of it, on the face of it. The Iraqi police force is a joke. Practically doesn't exist, and even the U.S. military admits that the number of Iraqi divisions that they have ready to go into battle, fully trained and actually, you know, willing to go out and fight, is that number, let's see, what was that number? Gosh, it's hard to remember. No, I remember it now. It's one. There's one in the whole country, and I said it wrong. It's not a division. It's just a, you know, one of those military groups. I don't remember so well. Number to call, 503-231-8187. This is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. And I've been talking down the Iraq War because it's time the U.S. bugged out. You know, if I had the power to do anything about it personally, I would do certain things. People ask, well, you know, what would you do about this difficult situation? And my, you know, first answer is usually, hey, I didn't start this difficult situation, you know. But if I had some power, why, I'd pay war reparations to the International Red Crescent and whoever else would agree to administer a post-war Iraq and issue an apology and withdraw our troops and try to make things right, because what else can you do? And to those who say, well, civil war will break out, yeah, it will. And how would that civil war be any worse than the horror and the bombing and the white phosphorus and the depleted uranium that we have inflicted upon those people who did nothing to us over, let's see, we started in 91, didn't we? So there are 14-year-old kids who have never known a day without the U.S. attacking Iraq in one way or another. I think I have time for one last caller, and so, hi.
Hi. Do you like your show? I just was wondering what your take on you know, this constant, this mantra, this repeated assertion that if we leave, there'll be chaos. I mean, the answer is obvious, but I'd like to, you know, this is something that has to be pointed out more often, but I'd like to take your, I'd like to have your take on it, okay? Thank you.
Okay, well, of course there will be chaos. Turkish are going to have their say, the Iranians are going to have their say, and of course it's crocodile tears is my answer to it. We never gave a damn about those people. We've burned, disfigured, bombed, dismembered, poisoned, and just turned that area into a horror. We've taken the most nutcase fundamentalists and rightly made them into heroes for defending their homeland and Al Jazeera, and we've spread that kind of fanaticism throughout the Middle East, just at a time when institutions like, oh, Al Jazeera, were making things more moderate and more acceptable. So, heck, it's time to do the right thing, you know, and there's going to be consequences for doing the right thing. There'll be worse consequences for doing the wrong thing, so it's time to withdraw all the troops now, home by Christmas, and I think I'm out of time. So thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for more of the Incomparable Radio Zine on KBOO Portland.
Not every day, but a lot. You know, where are you from? No, where are you really from? It happens, and nobody even bats an eye. I mean, people are just very curious, and I think it's the responsibility of our media to show that we're actually not foreign.
APA Compass, an Asian Pacific American public affairs program. Tune in for features on economic, political, and social justice issues, arts and culture, and APA perspectives.
This time, we look at Cambodian-American communities and the continuing impact of unexploded bombs and mines that the U.S. dropped on Cambodia with the upcoming film premiere, Bomb Hunters. And we'll hear back from Claire Oliveros, who's returned from the International Solidarity Mission in the Philippines. Plus, our interview with comedian, actress, author, and activist, Margaret Cho.
I would really love to be a straight white man just for a weekend because I think it would be so relaxing.
APA Compass, your Asian Pacific American orientation. Now on first Friday of the month, 9 to 10 a.m.